So we are holding on Kuf Yud Amud Bey's five lines from the bottom. Okay, so we discussed yesterday, we mentioned in the Mishnah about that certain things that you're not allowed to drink on Shabbos, certain things you're not allowed to eat or drink, medicinal foods, medicinal drinks. We said if they're things that are eaten normally by healthy people, then you're allowed to, but not if they are things that are eaten only, that are eaten only for medicinal purposes. And we said one example of a thing like that you're not allowed to eat it or drink rather is kos shel ikrin, is a cup of roots. Meaning we said you have a couple of different ingredients that we mentioned in the Gemara yesterday, which you mix with wine or with beer. We described yesterday what you do, that you mix all three of those ingredients with wine and give them to a woman who's suffering from ziva. And then that cures, it's one of 12 ways that we said in the Gemara of curing her, and it doesn't have the side effect of making her infertile. On the other hand, we said that for a person who's suffering from jaundice, yerokin, where their skin turns yellow, then we said you take two of the three ingredients and mix them with beer, and it'll cure them, but it'll have the side effect of making them infertile. So now we're going to talk about that point, about how is that allowed? What are the dinim involved in making someone infertile? So the yakoina trem b'shichro mi'akher. We say that for jaundice, you give the person two out of the three ingredients. The pashtus means any two out of the three, mixed with beer, and it will have the side effect that it'll cure him, but it'll have the side effect of making him sterile. So the question is, are you allowed to do that? How are you allowed to make a person sterile? We learn in a braisa. How do we know that you're not allowed to sterilize a person? So you have like this. The context is, the pasuk is talking about various mumim that pass al karban. Among them, the pasuk mentions ummo'uch v'chosus v'nosuk v'chorus, which are four things that could be done to the genitals, to the testicles, or to the aver, as the case may be. And the pasuk says you're not allowed to bring any animal that has any of those as a carbon. And then the pasuk finishes over artzachem loisasu, don't do it in your land. Now, what it means is Bachem loisasu, divrei Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina is telling us that the word of artzachem, because the point is like this, it doesn't mean, now on the surface you might have understood it to mean, it means that you're only not allowed to do that in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe it means you're allowed to do it anywhere else in the world. The problem with that is, it can't be like that, because we have a general rule that anything which is choivas haguf, any mitzvah which is binding on the person themselves, is just as binding in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. Only mitzvahs atluyas v'aretz. There's certain mitzvahs that depend on the land. For example, Shemitah, Trumas, Maestris, certain kinds of Kilayim, etc. And those apply only in Eretz Yisrael. So that's called mitzvahs atluyas v'aretz. And the rule is mitzvahs atluyas v'aretz, midaraisa apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Some of them midrabbanan apply. Some of them midrabbanan apply in certain parts of Chutz La'aretz, or maybe in all of Chutz La'aretz, as well as the case may be. But anyway, the point is, Sirus is not like that. Sirus has nothing to do with not being allowed to sterilize a person or an animal. Has nothing to do with the land. So therefore, it can't be a mitzvah that is applicable only in Eretz Yisrael. It must be, it's everywhere. So therefore, V'artzachem comes to teach us, therefore, anything that exists on the land. But even so, then, it's sort of still could have said, Ba'aretz loisasu. So the V'artzachem, the Chaf Mem, adds, even in yourselves, Bachem loisasu. You're not allowed to sterilize yourselves either. Another way that Rashi, how Tosfos explains it, a different way Rashi explains is that instead we the word loisa'asu can also be read as if it was loisei'asu. You should not be made. So you should not be made sterile by having somebody do something. So the question is how you allowed to. Now, of course, you could answer that the things it mentions in the pasuk, moch, v'chosus, etc., refer only to actually doing an operation on the genitals or whatever. Maybe it's different if they're just drinking a potion, as in this case. But still, the point is that it still wouldn't be allowed under those grounds as well. Still, you're not allowed to sterilize. A creature. Which, by the way, is very negative. When people have pets, for example, what you do as far as they usually spay or neuter them or whatever. It's pretty questionable. You know, halacha, you can't You can't really do that. One possibility you can do is you buy them, or you buy them from a grower. You already sprayed it and neutered. So then, yeah. Tosfos actually discusses the question over here. Is it that we're saying, maybe we're talking over here, he brings from Shiltus, maybe we're talking only according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says always, as we've had throughout the Masechta, Dabar She'ein Miskaven Aser. So even though, I mean, in this case, the guy is drinking the potion to cure him from jaundice, the fact that it makes him sterile is a side effect. It's a Dabar She'ein Miskaven. Maybe if we're talking about over here, it's Aser. Maybe that would only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfos says no, even according to Rabbi Shimon, because it's secretia. It's inevitable. It's going to cause sterility, and therefore we have the same problem. Anyway, so that's the question.
Is that dangerous? Someone who keeps running, that could be dangerous, right?
Well, you know, so we're not talking about ziva over here. Here we're talking about jaundice. So we're not talking about it where it's pekuach nefesh. If it's pekuach nefesh, obviously then he could take it. But then the Mishnah is telling us you can't take it on Shabbos. So the implication is on Shabbos you can't because of the gzeira de rabbanon about taking medicine. But on weekdays you could. If it's a matter of serious, you can't do it on weekdays either. The answer is hanimile hecha bekomichavim. The difference is that maybe it's only osir. In fact, when you're actually doing something, when you're actually doing an operation on the actual genitals, we hear it's something that happens on its own. The guy is taking this potion and it causes him to become infertile. As we have an example, the Amr of Yechanan, if a person wants to castrate, to sterilize a rooster, he can accomplish that by taking off the comb of the rooster, the comb that's on top of the head over there, when we start a snail of, and automatically it becomes sterilized. So you see, therefore, apparently from what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that you are allowed to do things as long as you're not actually touching the actual Evrei Hazera, the actual genitals, then it sounds like you're allowed to do things, even though they're going to have that effect. So the same thing, by the same logic over here, you should be allowed to drink a kosher ikrin, even though it'll have the effect of making him infertile, because it's not directly touching. However, the Gemara says no. Because don't you know, Rav Ashi said that in the case of the rooster, it's not that the lack of the comb physically prevents it from being able to mate and then whatever. What it is it's proud of its comb. Romus rucha means pride. Hudanakitale is grabbing a hold of it. Meaning the rooster is very proud of its comb, and when the comb is removed, like now it's depressed, now it's dejected, and therefore it doesn't feel like mating anymore. Not that it's physically incapable of, it just doesn't feel like doing it anymore. So therefore it's not the same thing. So you could say, okay, if you do something to somebody that makes them depressed, then they're not interested in having relations, then fine, maybe you'd be allowed to do that, but not the postural icarin, which actually makes them infertile. So, okay, maybe we're going to answer that you're right. When the Mishnah is saying you're allowed, when the Mishnah is implying that you're allowed to drink a kosher ikrin on weekdays and the problem is only on Shabbos, maybe it's talking about the person is already a soris. The person is already sterile, which there can be two kinds. There's one kind called Swiss Chama, where he was born infertile, and you have in the Gemara in Yevamos discusses, mentions various simonim that the person has. Basically a Swiss Chama, it's called, basically it's in modern terms, it could be there's some abnormality with their chromosomes, or it could be they have low testosterone, or whatever it is, their body doesn't develop like a normal man's body does. Chama literally means heat, because the Gemara mentions that one thing that can cause it is if the baby was exposed to too much heat in the womb. Whatever it is, the point is that the Gemara mentions over there various simonim of it. The person that doesn't grow pubic hair and other body hair, he doesn't grow a beard, his voice stays high, his skin is soft, etc., etc. So that's one kind. And then you have Swiss Adam, where you have like the Goyim used to do, maybe they still do in some places nowadays, where they sterilize people, they remove the testicles or they whatever, and yeah. Anyway. So maybe we're talking about that. The guy is already a soris, therefore maybe he's allowed to drink a kosher liquid because it can't make him any more infertile than it already and he already is. No, the Gemara says that doesn't work either. Now, like this, you have a machloikus in Bechoris. We know that there's an isser midaraisa to make a mum in kodshim. A Bechor is Kodshim. I mean, nowadays also, it's, you know, even though we don't have a Beis Mikdash, the Bechor is still Kodshim. You have to wait until either the Beis Mikdash is going to be rebuilt, or you wait until the Bechor develops a Mum, and then it's Kodshim Bali Mumim, and then you're able to Shecht it. But you're not allowed to make a Mum in it. So now what happens though, in Becholus, it talks about the case. What happens if the Bechor is suffering from, it's called Sha'och Zedam, it means it was seized by blood. It can, maybe it means high blood pressure, maybe it means some other kind of thing. The point is you have to let blood, you have to take out some blood from it, otherwise it's gonna die. So you have a machloikus over there. Are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to do that? And if you are, does it have to be in a place that won't make a mum? You have one opinion that says you're not allowed to at all because you may come to do it in a place where there's a mum. Another opinion that you can do it as long as you don't make a mum. And a third opinion, I think Rav Shimon says, Rav Shimon, who says, Dav Hashem Skaven is Mutter, says you're even allowed to do it in a place where it might make a mum because it's not Psik Resha. Anyway, the point is, so even though you have that machloikus, where in this case, in effect, the animal already has a mum because it already has this high blood pressure or whatever, and that's right now, it's that prevents it from being brought as a korban. So at the moment, that counts as a mum in effect. And now you're going to be making another mum in it conceivably. And you have this machlokas whether you're allowed to. However, hakol moedim, everybody agrees, the mechametz acha mechametz, that if a korban mincha, a korban mincha has to be kept non-chametz. But if any of the activities that are done with that mincha, if they're done while it's chametz, even one person, let's say, for example, one person kneaded it as chametz and another person shaped it and another person baked it, each one of them is going to be true chayev, each one of them is going to be chayev malchus for it. Shenema loisei ofa chametz, loisei osa chametz, because you have two psukim. One says that a korban mincha should not be baked as chametz, and the other one, it should not be made as chametz. Now, baking is one of the things that you do in making bread. Is it one of the steps is baking. So therefore, it's one of these examples of Dover Shahoya Baklal, the Yotzim in a Klal Lalamid, where we say that it was part of a Klal and singled out in the Pasuk. Lo Lalamid al-Atma Yotze al-Lalamid al-Klal Kula Yotze. It comes to teach us about the whole Klal. Just like there's a separate issue in the Torah for baking it as chametz, because it explicitly says Lo Yisei Alfa Chametz. The same thing, there's an individual lab for each of the other steps that might be done with the mincha. So that's what we're saying. So for example, so one person needs, so if it was made chametz and one person needed it, then he's going to be chayiv malchus. It doesn't say kneading in the pasuk, but it says baking, and we learn from that lalamad ala klal kula yotza that every activity involved in it is also in his chayiv malchus. Yeah, another way of understanding this mechametz acha mechametz, by the way, is that Amman puts it, is that let's say one person puts chametz, let's say one person puts sourdough into the mincha, and another person comes and puts some more in, then the second person is still going to be chayiv. Apparently, Rashi doesn't understand that way. Rashi would understand. Look, once it's chametz, it's chametz already. So he would understand that it's talking dafka about different activities. Anyway, also, and here's what's relevant to our sugya, the misaris acha misaris shulchayev. Also, if you sterilize an animal or a person after it was already sterile, then you're also chayev shenema, because the pasuk lists over there four things that could have been done with the beitzim. Mo'uch v'chosus v'nosuch v'chorus. Mo'uch means that they were squashed. Chosus, that they were chopped up. Nosuch means they were pulled away. V'chorus and cut. So Rashi over here understands that kodesh is actually less severe sort of than noisik. Noisik, whatever, would be where they're actually pulled completely loose, where the baitzim are actually pulled completely loose from the cords that they hang from. So they're still inside, they're still inside the sac, they're still inside the scrotum, but they're completely detached from the body, from the blood vessel, from the blood vessels and from the ducts and whatever that they hang from, that they're attached to. As opposed to chorus would be that those ducts were cut, but not necessarily completely. That maybe some of them were cut and some of them were not. Like you have, for example, nowadays when they do a vasectomy, let's say. So that's how Rashi learns over here. Rashi learns that nosuk would be where you take out the basin completely and take them completely out of the scrotum, as opposed to chorus, they were cut off but they're still in there. And the pasuk Rashi explains it a little differently, and Tosfos also over here says that it means more like what I was just saying, which I mistakenly said was Rashi, is that korus means that they're a little bit cut, and nosuk means they're completely ripped off. But in both cases, they're still actually there inside the pouch. Whatever the case, the point is, since the pasuk mentions that imar korus chayev al nosuk leikolshkein, now we have to ask if you even chayev malchus for doing korus, which is less serious because it involves only cutting them but still leaving them in there, or only cutting some of the ducts but not all of them, al nosuk like kol shekein, how much more so you be chayev for nosuk, which means according to Rashi removing them completely, or according to Tosfos cutting them off completely but still leaving them in there. Ela lahavi noisik achakodes shulchayim. It comes to teach us that even, let's say, one person did kodes and another person did noisik, the second person is still going to be chayim. I, kodes, was enough already to make the animal infertile. Doesn't matter. The second person is still chayim for doing his part. So again, if we're talking about a Swiss over here, then it has to still be the same thing. Yes, he's already a Saris. He's already infertile, but you're still not allowed to do another thing. You're still not allowed to do a Maisa to make him that would make him infertile. That would make him infertile. Yeah. Okay. So maybe we can answer. Maybe the Mishnah is saying that it would be allowed for an old person, an old man anyway, can't have children. So therefore, maybe he'd be allowed to drink a kosher liquid. The Gemara says no. No, because Rabbi Yochanan, who said when he was old that he took there were certain medicines and certain remedies that are mentioned in the Gemara in Gittin in the beginning of the seventh parak. There you have a long sugya that goes for like a blot and a half that go with different kinds of cures and remedies and whatever. And one of them is for a person who doesn't have koyach gavra, he doesn't have the ability to get erect and have relations. And Rabbi Yochanan says over there that it actually worked for me. I was old and I took this particular remedy that it mentions in the Gemara over there, and it worked. I have my koyach gavra again. So we see even an old person is able sometimes to have children again. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, look at Sarah. You know, she laughed and said, how could Abraham have children when he's old? And the fact is, after that, he had not only Yitzchak, he had six more children with the Torah. Now, Ella Beisha. So we have to answer, therefore, the Mishnah must be talking about a woman. Now, why is there no issue with a woman? Rashi explains, because a woman is not mitzuva in period of Arabia. So therefore, the whole concept of that you're not allowed to sterilize does not apply to women. Another way of, there's a couple of other ways of looking at it among Rishonim. One of them is that it is true that it doesn't apply to women, but the reason is different. The reason is because the psukim, again, we're learning it from the pasuk, umoach v'chasus, etc., which are all talking about things that are done to a male animal. Therefore, we don't have a source to say that it should apply to women or female animals as well. Then you have another way of looking at it, which is the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rambam learned it is fine. It's not an isur daraisa to do it to women or to female animals, but it is an isur derabban. So according to them, we would have to say, okay, it's an Isser Dirabbanan to do something directly. Here, it's not as direct, because after all, it's a kosher liquid, it's a potion, it's not actually doing an operation. But no, we said before it is, so that's the Tosfos that said before, it's Psychoresia. But nevertheless, there is, you know, at least over here, where she's taking it because of Yerokin, because of jaundice, you know, so there's a medical need for it, so maybe. There are, for example, a number of Trovas from Ramosha on these kinds of questions of when you might be allowed to do something to sterilize a woman. He has various cases over there. One of them is a woman was Rahman al-Aslan was having deformed children, and he said that's not a valid enough reason for her to be able to do that because it's not a threat to her health. Another one was it would be the doctor said it would be dangerous for her to get pregnant, but Moshe says, okay, but you still don't have to go as far as sterilizing her, doing a, you know, what do you call it, tying her tubes or whatever, or a hysterectomy or whatever, and let her have relations with her husband using a diaphragm or something to block her from getting pregnant. Then there's another one where there was no choice. None of those other methods were going to work for this particular woman. So then Rav Moshe says, fine, in that case, given that, according to many Rishonim, it's not an Issa at all, and only according to some Rishonim is an Issa Dirabbanan, and then fine, we can be matter it in a case like that. So that's a case-by-case thing. But anyway, okay. The Gemara says, what about Ulu Rav Yechon ben Broika? Okay, but how does that work then, according to Rav Yechon ben Broika? He learns that the mitzvah of pru avu applies to both men and women, because Hashem addresses it to both Adam and Chava, vayvarach oisam elikim. So my ikolamim, according to him, what are you going to say? According to him, then the issur of sirus, of sterilization, should apply to women as well. The answer is biskeno. You're talking about when the woman is old. We're there, okay, you know, it's not, again, first of all, given that it's not really the same act of sirus, it's not really the same kind of thing that you're doing. There's no actual operation over there, and then it's not the same parts that I mentioned in the Pesukim Umoch V'chosus, etc. Plus the fact that Derech HaTeva, an old woman, is not going to be able to have children again once she hits menopause. It would take a nest for her to have children again, like Sarah, as opposed to a man. You know, fine, he may need some of that stuff that Rabbi Yochanan used or whatever the modern equivalents are, but it's still possible, the Derech HaTeva. So therefore, so with her, there's less of an issue of her taking a sterilizing potion, given that she's already old anyway. Inami Bakara, or another possibility, is where she's already infertile anyway. Again, Tosafot says, given that the whole concept of Sirus doesn't really apply as much to women as it does to men, because they have different parts, then therefore we can be more makele. We said before, with a Sirus, with a man, we can't be makele to allow him to take it, but with a woman, we could.
This is actually a very good question.
Well, the answer is the Gemara says over there that the Chachamim would answer that that's a bracha that was given to Adam and Chava. The mitzvah pruavu was given only to Adam because the pasuk says over there v'chib shuha, pruavu milosar it's v'chib shuha, and dominate the world, conquer and dominate the world. And they have the famous expression ish dauki l'kabish, only men conquer, women don't. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on this topic of taking medications on Shabbos, hachoshish b'shinav. The Mishnah says a person who has a toothache. Lo yigamea behenes achoymetz. He's not allowed to swallow vinegar, which the idea would be. He puts vinegar in his mouth, switches it around, and that helps. The vinegar, as we said yesterday, helps close up the blood vessels, and therefore it helps relieve the gum ache or toothache or whatever it is. So he's not allowed to do that again because you don't usually do that on weekdays, and therefore it's obvious that he's doing it for before. Avol metabol hu kedavka, but he's allowed to dip bread into vinegar and eat it the normal way that you would. Vim nisrapen, and if that heals him, then good. It's a side effect basically, and he's not doing anything different that people would usually do on weekdays, and therefore it's allowed. We're going to talk about in the Gemara about spitting out versus swallowing. Another case, hachoshish b'mosnav, if a person has pain in his hips. Lo yosuch yayin v'chaymetz. He's not allowed to smear on. He's not allowed to smear on them wine and vinegar because again, people only do that when they're not feeling well. So then it would be a matter of obvious refuah, and you have the same old problem that he may come to grind up spices for medicines on Shabbos. Avol sochu is hashemen, but he is allowed to smear on them regular oil. But because people do that on weekdays as well. In those times, it was very common. People smeared oil on their skin to soften their skin and a sunscreen and then as cleanser and lots of other things. You asked me that yesterday. The answer is that there's a difference between oil, which is thin, and, for example, a lotion, which is thick. A lotion, which is thick, you have a problem of the malacha of mimareach, of smoothing out, like you'd be smoothing out a skin to make leather out of it. But when it's a thin consistency, like oil, then there's no problem.
Which oil?
Just regular olive oil or other. But the just smear it on the skin. Yeah, but veloy shemen verin, but not rose oil, meaning oil that roses were preserved in, because that kind people only use since it's very expensive. People only use it if they need it for medical purposes, and therefore you're back to the problem of medication on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah, B'nei Melochim Sochin Shemin Vered Amakasehin. Now princes, king's sons, are allowed to smear rose oil on their wounds on Shabbos. Shekein Daukam Losach B'chol, because on weekdays as well they do it, even if they don't have wounds, because they're rich. They're rich and they're pampered and they can afford that kind of thing. Famous expression of Shimon Omer Kol Yisrael B'nei Melochim. Shimon says that all Jewish people are princes, all Jewish people are sons of kings, and therefore if it's mutter for princes, then it has to be mutter for everybody. We'll see in the Gemara whether the halacha is like it. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Romi le Rav Acha Aricha, dehu Rav Acha bar Papa le Rav Abo. Rav Acha Aricha, which means the tall one, who was also Rav Acha bar Papa, so his real name is Rav Acha bar Papa, but they called him Rav Acha Aricha because he was tall. Anyway, he asked a question to Rav Abo. He pointed out a contradiction, to Rav Abo. Tnan, we learn in our Mishnah, Hachoshish B'shinav lo yigameh behenes hachoymetz. Was saying that if a person has a toothache, he's not allowed to swallow vinegar because the vinegar is going to help his teeth. The question is, l'memra d'chomets mali l'shinayim, are you telling me that vinegar is good for your teeth? But it's interesting. Usually in the Gemara, when we have a reminhu, it's usually from a mishnah to a braisa, from one mishnah to another one. It's not very often we have where we bring a contradiction from a pasuk. You have a pasuk in Mishlei that says, like vinegar for the teeth or like smoke to the eyes, so it is harmful. The pasuk finishes off, so it's like if you send a lazy person on to do a job for you, it's harmful for you because he's not going to do the job and you expected him to, and you're going to end up worse off than you were if you hadn't sent him in the first place. And the point is, the pasuk is saying vinegar is very bad for your teeth. And that's the comparison. So what do you mean the Mishnah is saying that vinegar is good for your teeth? The answer is like Kasha, habikuha depri habachala. There's a difference between the acid of the fruit versus vinegar. Meaning, Rashi explains, you can have wine that didn't fully mature in the grapes. So let's say, for example, it could be that the grapes were picked when they're not fully ripe, and then you have the juice in them is more acidic. It's not sweet enough yet. It could be, we're talking about when you're first pressing the grapes and it hasn't actually turned into wine yet. It's still grape juice. Whatever it is, then it's sharp and acidic, and then that's the kind that's not good for your teeth. That's the kind that Shlomo HaMelech is talking about in Mishlei. That's like sending a lazy person on a job. As opposed to halbachala, as opposed to vinegar, is what our Mishnah is talking about. Wine that was made and then it turned sour and became vinegar. That kind is fine for you. That kind is good for your teeth. The boisema halbachala. Another answer is that both of them are talking about vinegar. Both the pasuk and the Mishnah are talking about vinegar. But the difference is haldeikamaka, haldelekamaka. There's a difference whether he has a wound, whether he has a sore on his gums or something. Ikamaka masi. If there's a sore there, then the vinegar helps heal it, because again, what it does, it helps close up the blood vessels, so therefore it stops the bleeding. Lekamaka merapi. But if there's no sore on the gums, then it's bad for your teeth, because then what it does is if we're saying that it shrinks the flesh and the blood vessels, then therefore it's going to make the teeth come loose. Because now there's going to be less room for them in the gum, basically. So therefore, that would be the difference. So Shlomo HaMelech is talking about when you don't have gum disease, then vinegar is bad for you. And the Mishnah is talking about when you do have gum disease, and then vinegar is good for you. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, lo yagamea behenes achaymetz, you're not allowed to swallow vinegar in order to make your teeth or your gums feel better. So the question, in Vahatanya, we learn in a braisa, lo yagamea upolet avam gamea ubeleya. You're not allowed to gargle it and spit it out, because then you're obviously doing it for refuah. But you are allowed to swallow it. And you are allowed to gamea means like he puts it in his mouth and then starts swallowing it, like gargling it, and actually swallow it so it goes down into his stomach. So you are allowed to. So why is the Mishnah telling us that not? The answer is Amar Abai Titnan Namimastis in Gameo Perlitan. You're right. Our Mishnah is actually talking about where he's swallowing it, but not completely. He's just gargling it. He's putting it in his throat and gargling and swishing it around in his mouth and then spitting it out. That would be also because he's obviously doing it for refuah. Not really gargling. It's not really in his throat. We're talking about, let's say, he's swishing it around in his mouth. As opposed to if he swallows it, then that would be fine. Because then sometimes during the week also, people sometimes drink vinegar in order to whet their appetite. Rava says you don't even need to say that. You could even say that our Mishnah is saying that you're not allowed to swallow it down. But the difference is kan lefnei tibul, kan la'achar tibul. The difference is that we're talking about whether before you're eating or after you're eating. Tibul means eating, and the reason is because in those days, whenever they ate, they always dipped their food in something. You know, we have in Manashtanish, so in those, you know, in all other meals, we're not even required to dip one time, but practically speaking, they would. In general, when they ate their food, they would dip it in some kind of dip first. So the meal itself is called tibul. So if you're taking the vinegar before the meal, so yes, you're doing it for a toothache, but the fact of the matter is it's not obvious to you or to anybody, let alone to any, it's not obvious to anybody else that you're doing it for refuah, because sometimes people do that. They drink a little bit of vinegar in order to stimulate their appetite, as opposed to after the meal, you don't need to stimulate your appetite, so then you're obviously doing it for refuah. Okay, the Gemara asks, how could that be? V'neima midelifne tibul shari la'achar tibul nami shari. Why shouldn't we say, how could you have that? You can't have something as also for half of Shabbos and mutter for half of Shabbos. So if it's allowed before the meal, then it should be to swallow, even to swallow it, then it should be allowed after the meal as well. So how can Rava say that? And we know, disham inin leila Rava. In fact, we find Rava himself holds of such a concept. De'isle hoyil. Rava holds of the concept. Once something is mutter, then it has to be mutter. Once something is mutter on a certain day, then it has to be mutter for all that day. Namely, de'amar Rava. You have like this. The Gemara in Beitza talks about like this. You're not allowed to tovel kalim on Yom Tov, on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. And the reason is and not so much makom. Well, it's midrabbanan. It's called tik. Right. It's related to makom. It's called tikun kli. Like you're fixing the keli and making it usable. Whether it's, you know, you bought it for the first time from a goy, whether it's that it was tameh and you're toveling it so you can use it with truma, etc. Whatever. The point is that you're being a sack in it. Before it wasn't usable and now it is. But on the other hand. The question, can a person tovel on Shabbos? So Rava says over there, yes, because with a person, even though, yes, they're being the sack in themselves, they're making themselves and now Torah, but On the other hand, it's not obvious that they're doing it for that purpose. It could just be you are hot and you want it to cool off. So that applies to Shabbos. So the Gemara discusses over there. So what would Rava say on Yom Kippur, where you're not allowed to bathe for pleasure? Then you can't say if the person is going to the mikveh, he's doing it just because he's hot and he wants to cool off. So then what are you going to say? And the answer is, Rava says, listen, there's no such thing that is mutter on Shabbos as on the grounds of Malacha and also on Yom Kippur. You have the eating and drinking, etc., also on Yom Kippur, fine. But those aren't a matter of Malacha. Those are the special inuyim of Yom Kippur. But within Malacha, you don't have any within Malacha or within Zedus Terabbanon of Malacha. There's no such thing. So if you're allowed to on Shabbos, you have to be allowed to on Yom Kippur as well. The Chum wouldn't have made such a Zedah. Rava says there's no such thing. That's mutter on Shabbos and also on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur's Kedusha is less than Shabbos. That's why, for example, we have 6 aliyahs on Yom Kippur and 7 on Shabbos. Therefore, hoil, so he says, since the B'Shabbos Shari, since it's mutter to tovel on Shabbos, on the grounds that it looks like you're just cooling off, the Yom Kippurim Nami Shari, then it must be mutter on Yom Kippur as well. So we see that Rava holds of that concept that we say hoyel. So why don't we say over here the same thing? Once it's mutter to drink the vinegar before the meal, it should be mutter after the meal as well. The answer is hodebe Rava mehach. The answer is, as a matter of fact, Rava changed his mind in our Gemara over here and took back his answer about that there's a difference between before and after the meal, and accepted Abaya's answer that there's a difference between swishing it around and spitting it out versus swallowing. No, so that's the thing. Rava tried that explanation, but we said that won't work with Rava's own principle of hoyo. So we're saying you're right. Rava changed his mind and said, on the grounds of hoyo, we would have to allow him both before and after the meal if it was a matter of swallowing it. However, to spit it out, when is the Mishnah saying it's also? Would be like a buyer when if he's spitting it out.
General, before or after.
Before or after, right. Okay. So the question is, Mimai de mehach hadebe. How do you know that Rava changed his mind on the statement over here? Jumamai hi hadebe. Maybe Rava changed his mind over there and said you're not allowed to tovel on Yom Kippur. The answer is lois sakadai. If you can't think that way, to Tanya, as we actually learn in a Brisa, kocha yovitvilas tovel kedavkon ben betesba ben yom kippur. Anybody who's chayev to tovel is allowed to tovel normally on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. So Rava can't contradict the Braisa. So he can't take that back and say you can't tovel on Yom Kippur after all. It must be that when you chayev tovel. So it must be that he actually holds that indeed of hoyo. And that means in our case over here, it would mean if you're going to swallow the vinegar, then once it's allowed before the meal, it would have to be allowed after the meal as well. So he has to accept the Abaye's explanation. Now, what does that mean? Nowadays? Now, first of all, Tosfos points out the Gemara does mention over there in Beitza a couple of other possible reasons why you might not be allowed to tovel a keli on Shabbos, but you might be allowed to tovel yourself. One of them is that you might carry the keli for Amos and Rosh Hashanah, which would apply on Yom Kippur as well. Okay, but still, Tosfos says that we have Rava's explanation. We have Rava's explanation over there, and we have two different statements of Rava's over there that we're not gonna flip around two of them. We're not gonna say he changed his mind on two things on the grounds of in order to make the one over here still stand. So better to say the one over here, it's only one, so therefore he changed his mind. Now what is it nowadays? Nowadays we never heard of anybody toveling on Yom Kippur or on Tisha B'Av. So first of all, for men, it's not for men. Nowadays, we're not toveling because we're required to. We're toveling as a minhag, and a minhag obviously can't override the halacha of not toveling on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. What about women? So you have a few different considerations involved over here. First of all, Tosfos discusses them over here. First of all, you have a machloikas in the Gemara in a few places, whether tevila bizmana mitzvah or not. Is there, when a woman has to tovel, is there a mitzvah, or a man for that matter, when men kept Tumah Matara, is there a mitzvah to actually tovel on the first day that you have the opportunity to, or does it not matter? You can tovel whenever you want afterwards. So if we say tevila bizmana, lav mitzvah, then anyway, you don't have any grounds to tovel on Yom Kippur or on Tisha B'Av, just tovel the next day. But you have other considerations also, Tosfos points out. Nowadays, anyway, when women tovel, they're not toveling on the day they're supposed to anyway, because on a Daraisa level, you're usually only going to have, they're keeping more days because of the various chumras, because of the chumra, the rabzeira, about keeping the day, about treating a nidah as if she was a zava, and the chumrah that we have of waiting the extra 5 days and so forth. So in any way, it comes out she's not tovling on the day that she should have tovled on a daraisa level anyway. So therefore, we can't override Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur for it. The fact that you want to be matir her to have relations with her husband, you can't have relations with Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur anyway, so she might as well wait until the next night. Also, Tosfos quotes from a line from a Gemara in Tainis, that's from Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohanim, as far as Tisha B'Av, who says, you know what, the Beis HaMikdash is worth losing Tevilah 1 day a year for. So even if we hold Tevilah B'Zman HaMitzvah and all that, nevertheless, you know, come on, the Avelus of the Beis HaMikdash is important enough to override that. So for those various reasons, we don't have we don't actually apply this din nowadays that you're allowed to tovel on Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur. Next, we said in the Mishnah. Anyway, so the bottom line is again. So Rava's explanation about the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa, that one's talking about where you're swallowing the vinegar before the meal and that's mutter, and the other one's talking about where you're swallowing it after the meal and that's also, that doesn't stand. We slugged that up. We said Rava himself changed his mind about that. Therefore, we're left with Abaye's explanation that whether before or after the meal, you're allowed to swallow it, but you're not allowed to swish it around and spit it out. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, we said if a person is having pain in his hips or his waist or whatever, so we said he's allowed to smear regular oil on it, but not rose oil. And then we said, Rav Shimon says, Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim heim, and since princes are allowed to use rose oil, then so is anybody else. So, Amar Rav Abba bar Zabda, Amar Rav Halacha k'Rav Shimon. So, the Halacha is like Rav Shimon, you can use rose oil. The question is, Lememra d'Rav k'Rav Shimon svir alay. So you're telling me that Rav holds like Rav Shimon in when it comes to dinim of Shabbos, which we have a number, we've had so far in the Masechta, a number of machloikasin between Rav Shimon and other Tanoim, usually Rav Yehuda, where if you're going to say, so now we're going to bring a question from a different din that Rav Shimon says. So Rashi explains, it's just that why are we assuming that Rav holds like Rav Shimon when we see when it comes to a different kula regarding Shabbos that he does not hold like Rav Shimon? And in fact, we're showing him the Ramban talks about, the Balamora talks about various possibilities that the Gemara had, the Kabbalah, that Rav never holds like Rav Shimon in Hilchos Shabbos, and therefore, if we see in another case where he clearly says not like Rav Shimon, then we're entitled to say not here either. Or maybe that this is the most makel thing that Rav Shimon says in Hilchos Shabbos, this one about Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim heim. And if Rav doesn't accept even the more chumradikah ones, then for sure he's not going to accept this one. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that the thing we're going to quote over here has directly to do with the matter of Dovah Shein Miskaven. We're going to quote over here something about Dovah Shein Miskaven, and say that Rav says it's also, which is not like Rav Shimon. And Tosfos says that connects with our matter of not using rose oil. If we say that Dovah Shein Miskaven is also, then automatically, because of that, you wouldn't be allowed to use rose oil because you're not meaning for refuah. You're meaning because you're Ben Melech, you're a prince, and therefore you're using rose oil like they would. It has a refuah side effect, doesn't matter. So the Gemara is going to ask, according to Tosfos, then the question is, if we see that Rav does not hold like Rav Shimon in Dovah Shein Miskaven, then how can he hold over here like him when it's also Dovah Shein Miskaven? Okay. Namely, Va'amr Rav Shimon Bar Chiyah Meshmed Rav, Hai Mesukariya Dinizaisa, the stopper around the faucet on a barrel, meaning, in other words, Rashi describes like this, you make a hole in a wine barrel or whatever kind of barrel, which is made out of earthenware, and you attach a faucet to it to be able to get out wine or oil or whatever it is whenever you want. But inevitably, when you're making the hole, it's impossible to make it perfectly round that it'll fit the faucet so precisely. So you have to put in, like nowadays, you would use cork around it. So in those times, they would squeeze in a piece of cloth around it to fill up the gap, so the wine doesn't leak out around the faucet. So that kind of thing. Rav says, you're not allowed to put it back in place into the hole on Yom Tov or Shabbos because you have an issue of schita. Because you have an issue, Rashi explains, of you're not allowed to squeeze out a cloth of the liquid in it. And here, inevitably, it absorbs liquid. And here it absorbs liquid. And when you put it in there, you're going to be squeezing it out. And therefore, that would be also. Now it's not, now it's Dovish and Miscavin, because you're not intending to squeeze out the liquid. You're just intending to stick it tightly into the hole over there. And we're still to close up the barrel, and we're still saying it's awesome. So we see Rob, doesn't hold like Reb Shimon in Dovish and Miscavin. So what are you telling me then? Again, so according to many of the Rishonim, we're just asking, if we see that Rab does not hold like Reb Shimon in that, then it means he doesn't hold like Reb Shimon in other areas of Hilchos Shabbos either, including our Mishnah. Or according to Tosfos's way, it means, given that he says that Dovish and Miscavin is also, our Mishnah is also a case of Dovish and Miscavin, why is he saying that it's Mutter? Why is he saying Halacha is like Reb Shimon? Sfita and Yom Tov is also, yeah. Because that's not a malacha sechel nefesh. But with that said, though, Tosfos actually gets into a discussion here and also in Ksubas and also in a couple of other places of exactly what the malacha is that would be the problem. Is it schita, or is it maybe the malacha of malabin, that you're cleaning the cloth because you're getting the liquid out of it? Tosfos says it would be malabin if the liquid in the barrel was water, because then when you're squeezing out water from the cloth, you're making it cleaner. But if you have other kinds of liquids in there, then it wouldn't be, then it wouldn't be malabin, because you're not getting any cleaner by squeezing out some of the wine that's in the cloth. But then you would have the issue of schita, which is a tolda of the malacha of dosh, that you're taking something out of its container. Basically, it was embedded in the in the in the in the cloth over there, and like this, yeah.
Before Shabbos.
What? Well, if you put it in before Shabbos, obviously there's no problem. But we're saying on Yom Tov or Shabbos itself, you'd be awesome. Right, right. No, well, what you do with Pashtus is, I mean, I guess the idea is, you know, if the idea is that you're keeping this around the faucet, most of the time you're not going to take out the faucet on the faucet itself on Shabbos or Yom Tov. You'd leave the faucet in place. You'd leave the cloth wrapped around it to cork up the holes, and you just open up. You'd open up the faucet or whatever.
They have a valve.
Yeah, I don't know if they may have had valves in those days. I don't know.
Now they could drill. Exactly, don't
yeah, okay, even so. I mean, listen, yeah. You know, you see in plumbing, for example, they still need corked when you have pipes go together, right? So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, so the point is, the question is, if Rav doesn't hold like Reb Shimon, then why is he saying you're allowed, why is he saying here the halacha is like Reb Shimon, and you're allowed to use rose oil on Shabbos? The answer is that's not a proof. In that case, even Reb Shimon would agree that it's also. We know Reb Shimon agrees by psikresha. Here with the cloth, it's inevitable that you're going to squeeze out some liquid from it. So therefore, even Reb Shimon would have to agree that it would be also. By the way, the Aruch has a bit of a different explanation of this Mesukarius Denizaisa, because we've talked about before, Tosfos mentioned that the Aruch holds that even a psik reisha is not necessarily also if it's psik reisha deloy nichale, if he doesn't want the side effect of the psik reisha. Over here, he doesn't want liquid to be squeezed out of the cloth. He doesn't care about that one way or the other. So the Aruch explains that the Mesukarius Denizaisa, this thing that we're saying you're not allowed to attach on tightly, is more like a cover over, is more like a cloth that goes as a stopper on the barrel, and the point is, if you squeeze it out, any wine or whatever that comes out of it is going right back into the barrel. Therefore, you want it to go out back into the barrel, so you have more wine in the barrel. Therefore, it's not psikresha, delenichalai. Right, but the point is, if you're squeezing it in order to stick it in, then gravity is going to make that any wine that drips out of it is going to go into the barrel. Yeah, a little bit might come out the top, but not very much. Most of it is going to come out the bottom. Speaking of, by the way, I forgot to mention before when we were talking about Sirus and we were discussing the question of Yehuda and Reb Shimon, which one would say that it's also, what about the fact that it's a psik reisha de la nichale over there also? He doesn't want to become sterile. So according to the Aruch's definition, it should be allowed. So the Rosh explains, because this concept that psik reisha de la nichale is mutter applies only by Shabbos. By other dinim in the Torah, fine, we can say that Dovash and Miscavin might be mutter, but not psikresha. But if it's even whether it's psikresha, the nichalei or not, by other isurim in the Torah, such as Sirus, it would still apply. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the question is, okay, so fine. So we don't have a contradiction from that statement of Rab, but that we find that Rav says explicitly that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, as far as Dovash and Miscavin. But Rav Chanan bar Ami omer Shmuel halacha k'Rav Shimon. Rav Chanan bar Ami says in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Rav Shimon. Dovash and Miscavin is mutter. Rav Chiya bar Ovin machzni lo b'la gavri. Meanwhile, Rav Chiya bar Ovin learned a third version of it without the second generation that are quoting in the name of Rav and Shmuel, but just with the names of Rav and Shmuel themselves. Rav am halacha k'Rav Yehuda, Shmuel am halacha k'Rav Shimon. So we see clearly that Rav holds Dovash and Miscavin is also like Rabbi Yehuda. So again, how can he be holding like Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah? Either, again, if he doesn't hold it like him in that, he can't be holding like him in other areas of Hilchos Shabbos as well, because they had a Kabbalah that he holds like him in all or nothing, or that he holds like him all, in maybe in, you know, if he doesn't even hold like him in the most Kuladika case, then not in the other ones. Or as Tosfos says, because our case over here, the rose oil is itself Davar Sheni Miskaven, doesn't mean for Refor necessarily. Anyway, so how can you say? So how can he be saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon? Ela Omar Rava. So no, Rava says like this: Ani va'arish b'chavura tardima. I and one of the lions among the Talmud Chachamim explained what Rav meant, and the Gemara interjects: Who is this arish b'chavura? Umanu Rav Chiya ba'Oven. Halacha Rav Shimon v'lav mitaimei. Yes, Rav is saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon, but not on the same grounds as Rav Shimon is saying that it's mutter. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? My halacha k'rav shimon v'lav mitaimei. What do you mean by that? Ilema halacha k'rav shimon d'shari. Do you mean, yes, the halacha is like Rav Shimon, that you're allowed to use rose oil, v'lav mitaimei, but it's not based on Rav Shimon's reason, to either Rav Shimon sava masi, v'rav sava loy masi. Namely, you might say, Rav Shimon would say, even though rose oil has healing properties, nevertheless, you're allowed to use it on Shabbos because princes use it even during the week, even when they don't have wounds, and Kohi Sirob name of the name. And Rav would say, you know what? Rose oil anyway doesn't heal you. So therefore, you know, there's no problem using it on Shabbos any more than any other kind of oil. So maybe you would say that. Can't be. We say in the Mishnah that princes are allowed to put rose oil on their wounds. Obviously, that means that it actually has healing properties. So you can't say that's what Rav means. Ela no. It means halacha k'rav Shimon d'shari v'lav mitaimei. It means, yes, Rav Shimon is saying it's mutter, but not when Rava and Rav Chiya Oven are saying that Rav is saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon, but not on the grounds that Rav Shimon says it. What we mean is like this: the either Rav Shimon sava afagav b'le shchiach shari. Rav Shimon would say that even though rose oil is not commonly found, even though it's expensive, nevertheless it's mutter because Kol Yisrael b'nei Malach in name. Whereas the Tanakhama would hold that not. The Tanakhama would hold that because it's expensive and people use it only for refuah, therefore it would be usur. The Rav says it's not necessarily a blanket thing. If it's a place where it's cheaply available, then it's mutter. If not, then not. In Rav's particular area, rose oil was more easily available. It wasn't this kind of expensive luxury good that only princes use. Therefore, Rav is saying, in a place like that, you're allowed to use it on Shabbos because it's something that anybody can easily buy. It's not much more expensive than regular oil. But in a place where it's less common, then it would in fact be also. Refuah-wise, yes, it has healing properties, but because the same way as you're allowed to use regular oil, the same way in a place where rose oil is easily gotten, then you would be allowed to use that also. Well, I mean, you may be using it for refuah, but the point is it's not obvious to everybody else that you're doing it for refuah. Okay, Tosfos brings a girsa over here that actually means there's a three-way machlokas. You have one opinion would be you're never allowed to use it, even in a place where it's commonly used, unless maybe if you're a prince, that would be the Tanakhama. You'd have Rav Shimon who would say it's always mutter, and you'd have Rav who would be saying that it depends whether it's common or not. Okay, so now we're going to talk about more malachas of Shabbos. This is going to be actually really the last perek that's going to talk about individual malachas of Shabbos. After that, we're going to be dealing with various other dinim that are outgrowths of the malachas. Some of them daraisa, some of them darabanan, but not really going into detail about any one particular malacha. Okay, so here we're going to talk about the malachas of kosher and matir, tying and untying knots. Now we learned earlier that where do they do tying and untying in the Mishkan? So Rashi quotes over here that they would tie knots if while they were weaving the curtains of the Mishkan, if one of the threads broke, they would tie the two broken ends back together, and obviously that's never going to be untied. As far as untying, we said over there that the people who are trapping the chilazin using nets would tie ropes onto their nets, and sometimes they would untie the ropes in order to make the net larger or smaller, or in order to take ropes from one net and attach them to a different one. So those are the malachas of kosher and matir. That's because they needed the chalazin. They needed the dye from the chalazin for tchelas. Yeah. So that's what it is. Actually, so I mean, the Gemara actually discusses over there that you don't even need the case where a swing broke. Just the case involving the people who are trapped in the chalaz in itself. You have them tying ropes onto one net and untying them sometimes from there onto another one. So why does Rashi have to mention over here the case of the people weaving the curtains? The Tzemach Tzedek talks about it actually in his Chiddushim and says because there's a difference between a knot that's never meant to be undone versus one where you're tying it, not intending to ever untie it, but conceivably it might happen in the future that you might. For example, so the ones on the curtains, if they tie a knot over there because the swing's broke, definitely that knot is never going to be untied. There's never a reason to. As opposed to with the knots on the nets. Usually you're not going to, because once you put swings on the net, you're going to continue using the net long term. But once in a while, it could happen that you untie them from one to the other for whatever reason. So therefore, Rashi preferred to use the example where you have a knot that's made permanently and never meant to be untied, because that's the kind that Gemara is going to discuss over here, is the kind that's also Daraisa. So the Mishnah starts with, Ve'elu k'shorim shechayavin aleihem, the following kinds of knots a person is chayev on a daraisa level for, kesher hagamolin v'kesher hasaponin, the knot that's made by camel drivers and the knot that's made by sailors. So we're going to see in the Gemara what knots those are. And the Mishnah continues, uchshem shu chayev akishoran, with those kinds of knots, just like you chayev for tying them, kachu chayev alateran, so also you chayev for untying them. Reb Meir says, here's a rule, any knot that you could untie one-handed, because in other words, it's not a tight knot, you wouldn't be chayev for it on Shabbos, because since it's not a tight knot, so it's obviously not meant to be a permanent knot. There are Rishonim who learn that Rav Meir is not arguing with the Tanna Kamma, but rather giving another detail, and that the halacha might be like him. Most other Rishonim learn that knot, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that no, there's no difference between a tight knot and a loose knot. It depends, basically, as we're going to see in the Gemara today and tomorrow, that it depends on first of all, was it meant to be a permanent or semi-permanent knot, and also according to some Rishonim, was it a special kind of knot that only professionals make. So we'll get into those points. Okay, so the Gemara asks, my keshra gamolin, the keshra saponin, what do we mean by the knot that's made by camel drivers and by sailors? Now you have like this with a camel, you have they make a hole in the camel's nose, in the septum between the two nostrils. They put in there a ring. which is knotted and kept in there permanently. Once you put it in, there's almost never a reason to take it out. And then to that, you tie another rope, which they use when they're leading the camel around. They'll lead the camel by that rope. And then when they don't need it, then they'll untie it. But they might leave it on the camel for a couple of days at a time. Same thing with the boat. You have, Rashi explains, there's a hole near the front end of the boat into which they put a ring, which stays there, which they tie, and a ring of rope, which they tie and keep that there permanently. And then when they want to dock the boat or when they want to anchor the boat or whatever, then they tie a rope to that and they have the anchor at the other end or they tie it to the things on the dock over there. So that kind of rope, again, the first one that's in the hole is there permanently. The other one is attached to it sometimes, but not always. So that's the Gemara's asking, my keshra gamolin v'keshra saponin. Ilema kitra de katri bezmama v'kitra de katri beisturida. Do you mean the knot that they attach to the ring in the animal's nose and the knot that they attach to the ring in the boat? Hi kesher shedesh shokayamahu. What do you mean? That's not a permanent knot. If we're learning from the Mishkan, well, again, if they had a swing broke while they're weaving the cloth and they tie the two ends together, that's never going to be untied. And even the ones with the nets are not meant to be untied in general. It could happen. It could happen as a rare thing that they have to, but in general, they don't plan to when they first tie it. So how can you be chayev? So in this case over here, the one that you attach to the camel's nose ring or the one that you attach to the ship's ring, how could that be considered a kesher shokayama if you only do it for a few days at a time? No, what we mean is the knot of the actual ring in the nose or the actual ring in the ship. That knot is tied permanently and never meant to be undone. So therefore, that would be the kind that if a person ties it on Shabbos, then he's chayiv darai. We said in the Mishnah, a mayor says that any knot that you could untie one hand that is you're allowed to untie on Shabbos. Boy Rabbi Chadboy, Achurit Mar Acha, Rabbi Chadboy, the brother of Mar Acha, asked the question, An Nivol Rab Meir Maru. What about according to Rab Meir, what would be the din about a bow tie? The question is, Taimer did a Meir Mishim de Yochel Atir Ba'achim de Yadavu. The question is Reb Meir's basic idea that you're allowed to untie any knot that you could untie one-handed, V'hon Nami Yochel Atir, a bow tie you can also untie one-handed because you pull out one end and the whole knot comes apart. Or Duma, Taimer did a Meir Mishim de Loi Mehadik. Maybe Reb Meir's reason in the Mishnah has to do with the fact that a regular knot, not a bow tie, a regular double knot, let's say, that you could untie one-handed, is obviously not tied very tightly in the first place. On the other hand, Bahal Mahadik, as opposed to a bow knot, is tied very tightly. So in other words, maybe the mayor is saying only a knot that's loose enough to be untied with one hand is mutter, but not a bow tie, which in and of itself is tight. It's just it's shaped in such a way, the loops are made in such a way that you can easily untie it. Unless it's teku, so we don't know. We're gonna get back to this matter of bow ties later on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel on Shabbos. Bez Hashem, we're gonna deal with this question about whether you're allowed to tie bow ties when you are and aren't allowed to tie bow ties on Shabbos. Okay, stop here, I guess. Shkayach, everyone.